Judge Warren, I guess, have been talking about some of the issues in self-centered. Well, I wanted to set some expectations about this presentation, and when I do that, I'm going to tell you a story. And the story goes something like this. I used to work with Representative Fowles Hudson, and I want to set some expectations of what you can plan on with this. When I worked for the Department of Corrections, Representative Fowles Hudson Will ran the Enforcement Division, and this division was responsible for looking for inmates who escaped from the prison. And they got these new dogs that they wanted to train. So Will talked me into, there's Riverbed behind the prison. He talked me into running the Riverbed, getting a 20-minute head start, and then the dogs would chase me. This went on for about 2 hours as the dogs trying to find me. And I went home that night, and my wife said, "You look awful. Where'd you get all of those scratches all over you? And you look like you're beaten." I said, "Well, these dogs were chasing me in the riverbeds, and Will, because my wife knows Will, and Will taught me into doing this." And she looked at me and she said, "What were you thinking?" So that sets the expectations of what this presentation is going to be about. I am not too bright. That's all I have to say. Okay, first slide. There are two studies in the committee that I want to review and give you some background about the discussions about Family Court in Utah. First of all, there was something called the Utah Family Court Task Force, and that was a multidimensional task force that was happening around December of 1994. And then there was some family law initiative groups that were meeting in about 1999. And finally, our standing committee on children and family law was formed in April of 2000. And what I'm going to show you is that the task force basically recommended a family court. The family law initiative did not, but the solutions to some of the issues regarding family courts lies in what the work of the standing committee on children and family law is doing. So next slide, please. Interestingly enough, this whole thing of family court goes way back to a commission on justice in the 21st century that was going on in 1991. Didn't even work with the courts at that time, but I remember the discussions about it. They dealt with a plethora of issues about justice in the 21st century. And at that time, a family court was recommended by that task force. But one of the things that was decided in this family court task force was that simply structural changes, and I think when you evaluate family courts in other states, they may have a structural change to accomplish better services to families, but not necessarily the way it worked out in the end. So this family court task force did decide that they did not feel as though the change just alone would accomplish providing better services to families. They recommended a couple of things in the task force. First of all, the non-adversarial procedure. And I thought it was interesting that they recommended non-adversarial procedure. If anybody has ever been in a hearing about divorce or child abuse and neglect, well, you get a picture. Case management, appropriate case management of the case, communication amongst the courts, and coordination between the courts and agencies. So these were the goals of this structural change. Next slide. So what happened? If they recommended a family court, why did it not happen? At the time that that family task force recommended a family court, we were going through this very large change in the court system where our circuit and district court was combined, and we were in the throes of doing that. And this task force basically said, we do not want to move forward with the family court issue because we have not completed the combination of our district and circuit courts. If some of you have been around for a while in the court system, you know that the circuit courts handle misdemeanor types of offenses. District court handle felony types of offenses. Those two court levels were combined. So that work began in 1991 to phase in that change. It was phased in by different parts of the state at different times. And the transition was finalized in 1996. You can see that it was after that family court the task force of 1994. So this statute presented fundamental structural change to the courts, and the Judicial Council did not want to proceed with the family court initiative until the judicial article was implemented. So let me just say a word about the Judicial Council so that you know what that's about. First of all, Judge Bornak serves on that Judicial Council. The Judicial Council is the policy-making group of the Utah courts. There's only one other state that's structured like ours in terms of the Judicial Council, I believe, and that's California. But every court level in our state, Supreme, Appellate, District, Juvenile, Justice Courts are all represented on that council. And they are the policy-making group, number one, but they also are the ones that advance budget through the legislative process and any other initiatives for that matter. Next slide, please. So, the Family Law Initiative of 1999, so you had this first Family Law Task Force. They recommended a family court, and then they created this Family Law Initiative that was created in 1999. Their job, and it was instructions from the Judicial Council, was they were charged with examining what worked well and should be strengthened in our system, and what was not working well and needed improvement. So the Judicial Council really wasn't just looking at an up-down vote, family court, non-family court. They were looking for a critical analysis of the system and what was working well and what was not working well. In the end, with this Family Law Initiative, people really got hung up on this whole structural thing, partly because many people in our system did not feel as though a structural change would have resolved a lot of the issues that came up in the discussions. So it made communication and improvement difficult. So, next slide. The Judicial Council's resolution to this was to create what is called the Standing Committee on Children and Family Law. Our Judicial Council has a number of standing committees on a whole bunch of issues, and this is just one of the issues. As a matter of fact, Katie Gregory, who's sitting in front here, was sat to this committee for many years. And the charges that the Judicial Council gave to the Standing Committee were as follows. Number one, improve communication between the court levels. And I'm going to give you some information on how that was done. One of the initiatives was to develop a statewide mandatory mediation in all contested child custody cases. Another initiative was to appoint a guardian ad litem, and I assume you all know that a guardian ad litem represents the best interests of the child. They are appointed to represent the child, not the parent or parents, but the child, or the state for that matter. Appoint a guardian ad litem in all cases where abuse and neglect is alleged. Another initiative was to improve the quality and timeliness of custody evaluations. Another initiative to permit parties to submit a statement of the case in lieu of testimony, called proffer. And finally, they wanted to appoint the standing committee. So, here are the things. Next slide, please. Here's the committee meets on a quarterly basis, and they have since 2000. The co-chairs of that committee are from two different court levels, one from the district court, one from the juvenile court. First of all, one of the things that they did pretty much right out of the chute in this family law committee was the adoption of Rule 100. I'll summarize it. It gives the ability of judges at both court levels to talk with one another. And probably Judge Bornak will go into a little bit of detail about this, but the upshot of that rule was, before the rule, it may have violated when you discussed cases with another judge in another court level. ex parte communication issues. Second thing, we developed a mandatory divorce mediation and divorce education program statewide. It started out as a pilot. It was funded by federal funds. It now exists and has for some time for people who are going through divorce proceedings. They are mandated to go through, their children are mandated to go through divorce education, and they are mandated to go through divorce mediation. Another thing, another accomplishment of the committee, in our state, and we changed the statute about this, guardian ad litem can be appointed in all cases where abuse and neglect is alleged. And that is not the case. We have a statewide guardian ad litem system, unlike many other states, and they are appointed in all cases where there's abuse and neglect. We have developed a rule about proffer, where you don't have to necessarily have oral testimony before it, which takes time and money and that sort of stuff. So they decided that proffer thing had its problems. As a matter of fact, many of the divorce attorneys objected to having a rule about specifically about proffer. Finally, we made some improvements to the child custody evaluation, and we adopted a rule 40903. As a matter of fact, the committee probably worked on this issue 3 or 4 years. And it not only identified the qualifications of those who complete child custody evaluations, but the process. Excellent. So those were the accomplishments of the committee, and what are the things that the committee is working on right now? There's still a lot of issues for this committee to resolve in terms of divorce procedures, things that don't go smoothly, either in the district court or the juvenile court and the communications, so they're working on that. There's a dual jurisdiction with adoptions, and the committee is studying that issue. Some of you are aware that in delinquency cases, kids can be charged as adults if they commit certain offenses, serious offenses. And the last issue that they're finally working on is the issue of special masters in cases in the district court. So, I think what I wanted to give you is a background of the transition of what happened with family court in Utah. I think on base value, when people look at the Family Court Task Force and say, well, Utah didn't implement a recommendation of the Family Law Task Force, there was meetings afterwards and committees afterwards to determine that that was not the best direction to go. Judge Hornack is going to talk about the uniqueness of the Utah Juvenile Court and why that uniqueness probably convinces people that the family court may not be something that we need to do. So thank you very much.